Today is Monday, December 20th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chile Rojo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Islamic countries pledge trust fund for Afghanistan as millions face hunger and a harsh winter.
My big worry is that unless action is taken immediately, and I mean immediately, Afghanistan is heading for chaos.
But China and Russia collaborate to rival U.S. GPS and European Galileo satellite navigation system.
Russia's schism with the West and deepening confrontation and competition between China and the U.S. definitely contributing to rapprochement between Moscow and Beijing.
Also, a former law student who led protests for education wins Chile's presidential election. Our top story today is in Afghanistan. Islamic countries pledged on Sunday to set up a humanitarian trust fund for Afghanistan as millions face hunger and a harsh winter setting in. Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan warned of chaos if the worsening emergency was not urgently addressed. The crisis is causing mounting alarm, but the international response has been muted, given Western reluctance to help the Taliban government, which seized power in August. The trust fund announced by Pakistan's Foreign Minister Shah Mahmood Qureshi will be set up under the Islamic Development Bank, but it was unclear how much of the fund would contain, and the meeting did not provide official recognition to the Taliban government. Acting Afghan Foreign Minister Amir Khan Muttaqi said the government had restored peace and security and done much to address demands for more inclusiveness, including the rights of women. Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan.
My big worry is that unless action is taken immediately, and I mean immediately, because we've been saying this for now 2-3 months, unless action is taken immediately, Afghanistan is heading for chaos. And I must say that we have to, and I speak the United States specifically, they must de-link the Taliban government from the 40 million Afghan citizens. Even if they've been in conflict with Taliban for 40 years, 20 years. But this is a question of the people of Afghanistan, 40 million human beings. And that's why it is very important that action is taken immediately. Already we are late.
That's Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan. The World Food Programme warns a crisis of acute hunger facing millions of people in Afghanistan as winter sets in just one step away from becoming a catastrophe. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
To prevent the worst from happening, the World Food Programme is rapidly ramping up humanitarian operations in Afghanistan. The agency, which has provided food aid to 15 million Afghans in 2021, says it will increase the number of beneficiaries to 23 million in the coming year. WFP spokesman Thompson Feary says the Afghan economy is in shambles and currency depreciation is making it increasingly difficult for people to feed themselves.
Families are resorting to desperate measures as the bitter winter sets in. 9 in every 10 families are now buying less expensive food, which tends to be less nutritious. 8 in 10 are eating less, and 7 in 10 are borrowing food in order to get by.
WFP reports half of all children under 5, around 3.2 million, are expected to suffer from acute malnutrition this winter. Around 1 million children suffering from this condition have received nutrition treatment and malnutrition prevention this year, as have 500,000 pregnant and nursing women. Feary says WFP is planning to scale up this program in 2022. He says it also is working to provide school meals, take-home rations, and cash transfers for 1 million children across the country.
The needs are quite enormous, and we have a huge amount to do to stop this crisis from becoming a catastrophe. Our country director describes the situation is quite dire. She says it's an avalanche of hunger and destitution.
The World Food Programme says it urgently needs $220 million a month, or $2.6 billion in total, to provide life-saving assistance to 23 million Afghans in the coming year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
China and Russia have begun collaborating on technology to rival the U.S. GPS
a European Galileo satellite navigation systems. And analysts say it's one example of how Moscow and Beijing are pursuing closer military and strategic ties with big implications for global security. Harry Ridgewell reports.
Earlier this year, China agreed to host ground monitoring stations for Russia's GLONASS positioning system on its soil. These stations are a key component to global positioning. In turn, Russia agreed to host ground stations for China's Beidou system. Such ground stations are vulnerable to being hacked, and the reciprocal agreement indicates a growing level of trust and cooperation between Moscow and Beijing, says analyst Alexander Gabuev of the Carnegie Moscow Center.
Russia's schism with the West and deepening confrontation and competition between China and the U.S. as two superpowers is definitely contributing to rapprochement between Moscow and Beijing. There is a natural economic complementarity where Russia has abundance of natural resources and China has capital and technology to develop those resources. And finally, both are authoritarian states.
Satellites are another component in global navigation. China's Beidou system uses 35 satellites to provide users with a location on Earth to an accuracy of about 10 meters or higher for military users. GLONASS has fewer satellites in orbit. It will take some time for the collaboration on satellite navigation systems to be felt. Again, analyst Alexander Gabuev.
So far, we have yet to see important results because in Russia, Russia still relies increasingly on GLONASS, but also on GPS. We don't have major Beidou-linked projects.
Satellites are also seen as a crucial component of 21st century military power. Last month, Russia tested a missile against one of its own satellites. The United States said the resulting debris threatened astronauts on the International Space Station. U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin spoke after the missile test.
What's most troubling about that is the danger that it creates for the international community. It undermines strategic stability.
Russia, China, and the United States are among several nations developing hypersonic missiles, which travel through the upper atmosphere at five times the speed of sound. Moscow said the United States had failed to engage on a joint Russian-Chinese space treaty. Sergei Lavrov is Russia's foreign minister. He said they have ignored for many years the initiative of Russia and China to prepare a treaty to prevent an arms race in space. They simply ignore it, insisting instead on developing some sort of universal rules. But there are limits to Russian and Chinese cooperation, says Gabuev.
Both Russia and China are religious about their strategic autonomy. There is deep-seated nationalism, there is some level of mistrust, and some level of competition in many of those areas where there is seeming complementarity, like space programs.
Russia has worked more closely with India than China, developing the joint BrahMos missile system. India has also purchased Russia's S-400 missile defense system, an attempt to counter China's military might. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
President Vladimir Putin and Chinese leader Xi Jinping presented a united front after a video summit this week amid heightened tensions with the United States and the West. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Russian and Chinese media shone a spotlight on the phone summit between Russian President Vladimir Putin and Chinese leader Xi Jinping. Putin became the first major world leader to declare that he would attend the Winter Olympics in Beijing after the U.S. and several other countries had announced a diplomatic boycott. For his part, Xi pledged understanding and support for Putin's massive military buildup along Russia's border with Ukraine, which has alarmed the U.S., NATO, and the European Union, who say another Russian invasion, like its 2014 seizure of its neighbor Crimea, will trigger severe consequences, unlike anything Moscow has seen before. Some experts think Putin is testing President Joe Biden with a show of force. Marina Vorudnyak of the London-based Royal United Services Institute via WebEx.
Russia, Kremlin sees it appropriate at the moment to put pressure on Washington. Now, at the moment when it feels that U.S. is preoccupied with China.
Other experts note there was a lot of theater around the virtual summit between Putin and Xi, but add that the two leaders do seem to have a good relationship. Michael Kimmage of the German Marshall Fund via Skype.
It seems to be sort of genuine chemistry between them, which is significant and not to be taken for granted. And I think it's also, you know, sort of clear that they're projecting a commonality of vision, that they have certain agreement on the kind of world that they want to see, in which countries like Russia and China play a very substantial role and sort of write the rules. And tacitly, what is understood by that is that Europe and the United States are not meant to dominate the show.
Kimmage said economic ties between the two countries are flourishing because China is an enormous market for Russian energy.
This is, of course, the lifeblood of the Russian economy. And this is highly significant at a moment of real tension between Europe and Russia.
Kimmage said despite their pledges of a friendly alliance, it is unlikely that Xi or Putin could count on the other for military support in the event of a serious conflict with the United States, either in Ukraine or Taiwan. Alexander Gabuev of the Carnegie Moscow Center sees natural limits to the Sino-Russian partnership.
I guess that both Russia and China are religious about their strategic autonomy. There is deep-seated nationalism. There is some level of mistrust and some level of competition in many of those areas where there is seeming complementarity, like space programs.
Experts say a closer alliance between China and Russia poses a challenge to President Joe Biden, who needs to continue working closely with U.S. allies and stand up for issues of concern like the territorial integrity of Ukraine. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
The fifth wave of the coronavirus pandemic, largely driven by the Omicron variant, continues spreading across the world, pushing some healthcare systems to the brink. In some places, government measures to control spread have been met with opposition by those who say they've had enough of lockdowns and mandates. U.S. President Joe Biden will address the United States about the matter on Tuesday. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Demonstrations turned violent over the weekend at an anti-vaccination rally in central London. Protesters from a crowd of roughly 5,000 surrounded police outside Parliament Square during the United for Freedom march. Some carried signs that read, "No forced vaccinations, and it's all been a pack of lies." This follows London's mayor, Sadiq Khan, declaring a major incident in the British capital following a surge of infections from the highly transmissible Omicron variant of the coronavirus.
"We're incredibly concerned by the huge surge in the Omicron variant. Over the last 24 hours, we've had the largest number of new cases since this pandemic began, more than 26,000. Hospital admissions are going up, but also staff absences are going up by a massive level. So I've taken the decision, in consultation with our partners, to declare a major incident today."
Other major European cities like Barcelona and Paris saw protests over once again tightening restrictions driven by the Omicron variant. The Netherlands announced a full lockdown. Sunday, U.S. President Joe Biden's chief medical advisor, Dr. Anthony Fauci, told ABC's This Week that roughly 50 million unvaccinated Americans may prove a burden on a virus-weary healthcare system that is already stretched thin.
"When you have that degree of vulnerability and you have a virus like Omicron that spreads so rapidly, it is quite likely that we are going to see in some sections of the country a significant stress on the hospital system, as well as on the healthcare workers who are getting exhausted."
Staff at New Cross Hospital in central England echoed similar concerns.
"Initially, it was all hands on deck. Everyone was full of energy. But as the time's gone on, it seems like there's no ending to it."
Some patients at New Cross are fully vaccinated, a testament to Omicron's transmissibility.
"Now I go to the gym 3 or 4 times a week, mountain bike. Never off sick. It's just knocked me off my face. Now, as you say, I don't think it's going to happen. I've been double jabbed as well. May and July, I was jabbed. And I did say if I hadn't been vaccinated, I probably wouldn't be here."
As of Friday, the United Kingdom set a third record in as many days with more than 93,000 infections, while New York City reported its highest single-day count, more than 21,000, beating the previous high from January. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Australia's most populous state is being urged to reintroduce COVID-19 restrictions after seeing a record number of new infections. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
New South Wales is relaxing mask and social distancing rules at the same time as coronavirus infections are hitting record numbers. On Monday, Australia's most populous state recorded 2,500 new cases over a 24-hour period. Health officials believe the Omicron variant likely accounts for the majority of those infections. Hospital admissions increased by more than 15% in the same period. Of the 33 people in the state's intensive care units, 26 are unvaccinated, according to the health department. After a week in which the number of cases rose, Australia's political leaders are urging calm and are promising that widespread lockdowns, which have been a feature of the pandemic, won't be reimposed over the holiday season. New South Wales Premier Dominic Perrottet says his government is taking a sensible approach.
Every day we look at the numbers that are in front of us, the hospitalisations and the ICU presentations, and we'll continue to take a balanced, proportionate and measured response.
The Australian Medical Association said the decision to ease long-standing disease control measures was bizarre timing. Nancy Baxter, a clinical epidemiologist and head of the Melbourne School of Population and Global Health at the University of Melbourne, believes it's too early to relax restrictions.
Basically, we have a big gamble on this being an incredibly mild variant of COVID, because even if it's a bit milder, it's more transmissible and it transmits amongst the vaccinated. So even if it's a bit milder, this is going to be a huge problem for our hospitals and healthcare systems. When you look at New South Wales, they continued with the relaxation they had planned before, basically ignoring the fact that the rules of the game had changed.
Nationally, 90% of eligible Australians are fully vaccinated, according to the health department. And the authorities are urging the community to get a third booster. Australia has 250,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus since the start of the pandemic. About 2,100 people have died. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is the Voice of America. Israeli ministers have agreed to ban travel to the United States, Canada and 8 other countries amid the rapid global spread of the Omicron variant. The rare decision mandate to red list the U.S. comes amid rising coronavirus infections in Israel. The U.S. will join a growing list of European countries and other destinations to which Israelis are barred from traveling and from which returning travelers must remain in quarantine. A parliamentary committee is expected to give the measure final approval. Once authorized, the travel ban will take effect at midnight on Wednesday. The death toll following the strongest typhoon to batter the Philippines this year has climbed to more than 200, with 52 more people still missing. At its strongest, the typhoon packed sustained winds of 195 kilometers per hour and gusts of up to 270 kilometers before it blew into the South China Sea on Friday. You are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Afo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. As it marked International Migrants Day, the United Nations report hostility and xenophobia are growing against migrants. It warns the stigmatization and marginalization of migrants amid a raging pandemic is putting many lives at risk. Again, Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN agencies report one-seventh of the global population, or 1 billion people, are on the move. This number includes a record 281 million international migrants and 84 million people forcibly displaced by conflict, violence, and climate change. Director General of the International Organization for Migration, Antonio Vitorino, says many migrants embark on dangerous, life-threatening journeys in search of better economic opportunities. Others are forced from their homes because of natural and man-made disasters. He says many of these vulnerable people fall into the hands of unscrupulous people smugglers operating along migration routes worldwide. He says COVID-19 has worsened the difficulties migrants encounter.
Beyond the images of closed borders, separated families, and economic instability, the now two-year-old global pandemic has spawned a new wave of anti-migrant sentiment. And the increasing instrumentalization of migrants as tools in state policy. Both are unacceptable.
Instead of being a liability, he underlines the invaluable contributions migrants make across the world. He says migrant workers, nurses, healthcare workers have kept millions of people safe from COVID. He says migrant remittances have provided a lifeline for families made destitute by the pandemic.
The positive social and economic impact in the countries where they reside and the $540 billion remitted last year to communities in lower and middle income countries are measures of the industry, entrepreneurship and community from which we all benefit.
And yet he notes too many governments continue to exclude migrants from their pandemic, social and economic recovery plans because of their legal status. UN and international organizations are appealing to governments to grant migrants access to life-saving COVID-19 vaccines. To do otherwise, they say, would pose a threat to the health of all people. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
10 years after leading student protests demanding better education, Gabriel Boric won the country's presidential runoff election on Sunday. His win caps a major revival of the country's progressive left, which has been on the rise since widespread protests roiled the ADN country 2 years ago. The former law student, who has pledged to bury Chile's neoliberal economic model, convincingly defeated far-right rival José Antonio Kast in the country's presidential runoff on Sunday. Brian Wood of Reuters reports.
Chile is said to have its youngest president ever, after 35-year-old leftist Gabriel Boric won in Sunday's elections. It marks a remarkable rise for Chile's progressive left and ends one of the most divisive contests the country's seen in decades. Boric supporters were out cheering, hugging, and waving flags in the streets of the capital, Santiago. The young leader thanked voters as he accepted victory on Sunday night.
I want to address all Chileans who are listening to us. I want you and our people to know that I will do my best to rise to this tremendous challenge. Our country shows its best when we unite for significant challenges.
The final two candidates offered polarized visions for the future. Far-right rival José Antonio Kast ran on a law and order campaign, has been compared to former U.S. President Donald Trump, and is a defender of the former Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet. Meanwhile, Boric tapped into anger over decades of market-oriented economics, widely seen as fostering inequality. In his campaign for president, he promised to make the changes Chileans demanded in massive protests in 2019, including over pensions and education. Those demonstrations sparked a formal process to redraft Chile's decades-old constitution. That text will face a referendum next year.
That's Brian Wood of Reuters. Pro-Beijing candidates have won a landslide victory in Hong Kong's legislative elections. They defeated moderates and independents in the city's first poll since Beijing passed a resolution to amend the city's election laws to ensure that only, quote, patriots, unquote, loyal to Beijing, could run for the city. Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam says she's satisfied with the election, despite a 30.2% voter turnout, the lowest since Britain handed Hong Kong over to China in 1997. All candidates were vetted by a largely pro-Beijing committee before they could be nominated, and the number of directly elected lawmakers was reduced. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Powell Dawson, I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a pleasant evening.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at @CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA. every Saturday and Sunday.